few different files. I guess they're probably already listed up there. Just a few different files. So I'll just go through them and mention what they do. The code could probably use a little bit of work if anyone knows how to fix. There's a couple of to-dos. If anyone can give me any suggestions or has any feedback, that'd be awesome. Okay, so the... Can people see this, or...?
Weird for me.
Okay, so this file basically just gives you a template for the package build. So you can see there's just a function or a field for each part of the package build, so it's really easy to customize. If you want to customize the template to have whatever look you want, you can just open this up and modify whatever relevant field to make it so they'll end up being the way you want it to. And so automatically, basically what we try to do is copy the way the templates are in the ABS templates for Ruby. And it's just like some simple functions to fill and stuff. And then we ran into a problem here because the way Ruby works, they have a much more complicated way of specifying which package versions to use. Like they can say like you have to use exactly this version, or between this version and that version. You can't really do that with package builds in Arch, so we had to basically just put in some same type of defaults and ignore their package requirements. So that's something also you have to be aware of if you're trying to turn a Ruby gem into an Arch package, is that you're going to have to just try and choose what works, because there isn't really a direct translation between the two. Okay. And then, so the gem packages are written in YAML, so we just use a Python library, and then okay, so this basically in this file, all we have to do is specify all the different fields that can appear in the gem package, and then this way we're able to extract all those fields using the YAML module. And so this was fairly straightforward, just kind of just listing all of the different fields that are needed. And then there's the main file.
Only it has an extension.
You're right, okay. so here's the main file. Basically just calls the script, and there was a little bit more functionality, but I actually took some functionality out of this script. I actually tried to make it simpler than it was before, because I thought I was trying to do more than it really needed to be doing. But you can use this to build just one package, but if you want to build more packages, then you can pass an option so that it will say what the dependencies are, so you can put it in a bash script or a loop or something, or do whatever you want, so you can build a whole series of packages at once, using a bash script. So it's pretty simple, just short code called that parses just a couple options. So I guess what I'll show you is anyone who's got a Ruby package they want to see that's not included, so you can see how well this does. Anyone? Package you want? I'll just choose one if no one has
anything.
What's that?
I don't know anything about Ruby.
Anyone that use any Ruby packages?
I'm just laughing at the fact that
it's in Python.
It's in Python, yeah.
Is that, which, because it's
Ruby,
not
yeah, I would have expected, you know, things to do Ruby in Ruby.
Well, I don't know Ruby, so...
So who did you write this for?
Well, I wrote it because I had some... There were some packages which were written in Ruby which I wanted to use. I didn't know Ruby, but for SUP was an email client, and it had something like... It has a number of, like, 15 dependencies or something, and someone had a SUP package in the org, and it just installed all of them at once, like one package installing like 15 different things, and it's really kind of hackish and bad. So we put this together to make it easier to create all the packages and have real packages and maintain them so that that would work better. So that's basically, I don't have a lot of experience with any of this, as you can see, but it's my first attempt basically just to help contribute back and put something in the community.
So build that one? The one that you originally built?
Oh, so SUP, yeah, SUP was, so if you type in...
1 minute.
Gem2arch SUP.
Dot file.
So... I don't have my system. Okay, I'm probably not going to be able to do this fast enough.
40
seconds. Forgot the time you
have. Come back on.
No case S. Search for.
Oh god.
Go. Headers.
Is that right?
Python.
Is it
Python. That's
easy.
Yeah.
Sound.
Yeah, Python.
There's I for info and E for errors and W for warning. This takes about 30 seconds to a minute, basically, because it has to...
So can I ask a question while it's going?
Yeah, go ahead.
So was there any decision to make this rather than just roll your own gem repository? Or just to install gems by hand?
You mean like using the gem install?
Yeah.
Well, basically, from what I heard from other people in the community, you shouldn't be using gem install and solid gems, because if you do it that way, then Pac-Man won't be aware of what you've installed using that. And also, there's a number of packages which are already in the core and extra, so you could have problems because your system, you know, if you have a file conflict or something. So that's why I did this. And basically, before I had this, I would just pretty much do the same thing, only manually, and it's annoying because it just being, you know, using gem, you know, it's just tedious filling in all the lines. Hopefully, this finishes pretty soon.
Who's next?
Is anyone timing this?
It's a long way.
So like it's, I mean, there's kind of like a there's a fair amount of issues between like trying to make packages work in Pac-Man, because a lot of times every language has their own packaging system. They don't always translate all that well into an Arch package build.
Great performance.
Okay, so this is a terrible demonstration.
It works.
All right. I see we'll go to the next one.
All right, I'm sorry.
Yep.
We believe it.
If it worked correctly, though, you'd see a package. package build with all the info filled in.
That means now that you are filling up much better space, on your right. So wouldn't that make your hard drive feel faster?
It doesn't feel faster, it's just that it does fill in, like when you delete data, it doesn't fill up those gaps. So what you have is you have a garbage collector that goes in and collects all that and moves data to the front of the log when you start running out of space, so it compacts it naturally. So basically what happens is you're writing, let me draw that up real quick. So
you can erase whatever you want there.
So here's your disk, right? You're writing, and then, oh, you want to delete this, right? But you don't actually delete it, you just mark it.
DOS does.
Huh?
DOS does the same thing. DOS, it does the same thing.
Yeah. So anyways, then when you start running out of space, it gets here. It goes through and so it reclaims this space, and it takes whatever, and it moves it to the head, and wipes this out. So you constantly have this empty tail and this head that keeps growing.
See how it's better than DOS. It didn't solve the problem of DOS.
The DOS, what was
clustering of the data gets spread all over the place.
And except now we have 16 gigs of memory instead of 4 meg.
Yes, exactly. So
you could store all that in memory.
Exactly. So the idea was, right here, how flash-based devices...
the very first sentence of that paragraph.
Oh, was it the very first? Yeah, I remember there was a good answer for this. The design rationale for live structured file systems assumes that most reads will be optimized away by ever-enlarging memory caches. So we're saying that the reads are not going to be as much of a problem anymore because our reads are really fast and are not affected by random seek times anymore. So that being the case, we get all the cool advantages like snapshotting and sequential writes, which speeds up our throughput, and we don't have to deal with the disadvantages, which we used to have to, which was slow read times and fragmentation. So let me just show you a couple graphs, not super impressive, but somewhat impressive. So this guy went in and he had a USB stick, a 4 gig USB stick, that he was trying to put a operating system on, and he just wanted something that's really fast. So here's a quick snapshot of ext2, ext3, and ILFS. And you can see here for writing a 4 gigabyte file, so the USB stick is flash memory, right? And it's very slow flash memory, so we can actually see some clear differences here. On ext2, this is the number of milliseconds, I believe, to write a 4 gigabyte file. So you can see the difference here is about a minute and a half between ILFS2 and ext2. And a little bit more negligible with ext3, but still a little bit faster. Read negligible across the board, which is what we would expect since it's not hampered by seek times. For writing directories, that's where it gets a little bit more impressive. You can see that the writes are very consistent and very small, whereas they vary a little bit more with ext2 and ext3. In fact, ext3 looks terrible for writing directories and small files. The other really, really cool thing about this that we get for free, not only do we get a little bit boost in performance, we also, for SSDs, they have an issue with wear. Cells getting worn out, so if you write to SSD too many times, the cells become weaker and less performant. What we get for free with this is since we're constantly writing across the whole disk, we're constantly using the entire disk. So we ensure wear leveling for free. The other thing we're getting is those snapshots, and let me just reemphasize those snapshots. There's a nice little example of that here. How am I doing on time?
You have 30 seconds left.
Okay, great. That's all I need. So what you do is you go in, it's just like ext2 or anything like that, with MKFS and ILFS2. And then you get these nice little tools out of the utils package. Where you do LSCP, you can see all the checkpoints. Checkpoints are not snapshots, just anytime you do a write, you get that. And then if you do LS, or you can turn those checkpoints into snapshots. You can't see it here, but you end up right here. So you can make mount a checkpoint at the same time that you have regular mount, and it'll have, at whatever checkpoint you mount it at, it'll have the file system in a read-only state at the time of the checkpoint. So, very cool. Try it out. I'm trying to help get it into Arch so you can use it as a root file system. But if you're not using it as a root file system, it's already there. Just install NLFS utils and do it like you do any other POSIX file system. That's it. Thank you.
Did you send an email to Arch General today or something?
Yeah, yesterday. So
okay,
I ended up, I wanted to really badly run it on my